go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour on this Wednesday, the 13th day of February, 2013. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com at midweek. The program, of course, always most easily accessed by going to headonradionetwork.com, but widely available on a variety of other platforms, including smartphone platforms like TuneIn Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, as well as places like Dar.fm, Streama.com, Roku devices, and on. You can always get the podcast by going to WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for this program, or yeah, you can go to iTunes if anybody still does that. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Like I said, it's Wednesday, hump day, downhill to Friday. It is, however, also our last broadcast day for this week, because, as I noted, I'm headed back out to Wisconsin. Lovely, lovely. Albeit frozen, Wisconsin. I will be returning Monday afternoon. Hopefully, I will be back up the mountain in time for Moran Monday, this coming 18th of February. I'm looking forward to what I'm going out there for. It is a great gathering on the at the reservation of the Lac Coeur d'Alene band of the Ojibwe people, the Anishinaabe. And we will be talking about what happens when mountaintop removal and other massive scale extractive industry comes to your neighborhood. Suffice to say that when that happens, it is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a beautiful day in the neighborhood. The Horn is, of course, listener-supported, and I was absolutely gobsmacked earlier today. I got a note. I got a notification from PayPal. And it came with the following. It is from Donald. Find some way to match or meet if you'd like. Good luck. The contribution was for $500. And so, since we did finish off January, and we are still working on February, in honor of that great expression of goodwill, I will simply say that it would be wonderful for those who did not participate in the great crisis aversion, if you can, to help meet that, help match that fund. And that'll get us a long way toward done with February. You know, of course, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The only way you can use the gift function is if you simply go to your own PayPal account and send to bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's the email address that's tied to our PayPal account, but the option doesn't show up on the webpage. But you can go there and choose personal and gift. And that way you can, the transfer fees won't be as heinous. I'm, like I said, I'm simply stunned. This has allowed for a bunch of bill paying further to go on this evening, which makes it a little less dicey for me to go away from here for a couple of days. So thank you. Thank you very much. We also had a note. Yeah, you think just because we haven't heard from her for a while that maybe she's not paying attention. No. I also had a note in the email box today. The subject line on it said, "What did I miss?" See what you started, Ron? Hey, Bob, what did I miss? Just got in. Now, the subject line was, "What did I miss?" And then the word, "Joking, dot, dot, dot." "Dear Bob, I'm still on the Gulf Coast in Mississippi doing some volunteer work for Katrina survivors. I've been gone from the Front Range since early January and probably won't be back until late March. Internet connections are always spotty, as is my time and energy. However, I pick up the occasional archive. Imagine my surprise when I heard you say that we were 3 days from going dark. Over the years, I've been going on and on about how important audience participation is to keep the funds coming in. I hope this last close call will serve as a wake-up. I would like to personally thank everyone who is picking up the slack for me, as all my available funds are going toward recovery down here. Well, I did use a bit extra to make a trip to Knoxville to work the January Remote Area Clinic." Read up on the Remote Area Clinic. It's amazing. "We served over 600 folks who needed medical, dental, and vision. Bless them, they lined up in the parking lot starting at midnight in 10-degree weather, waiting for the doors to open at 6 a.m. I figured that there were enough horn folks to make up the difference, allowing me to go to the RAM clinic with a clear conscience. Thanks to all of you for keeping the mic hot. Signed, Kate, in Mississippi." Now, who was it that wrote in the other night and said, "We wouldn't want Kate mad at us"? Kate is paying attention, and don't think she ain't. But let's back up for just a minute there. "We served 600 folks who needed medical, dental, and vision who lined up in the parking lot starting at midnight in 10-degree weather, waiting for the doors to open at 6 a.m. We got any Republicans handy out there who can give us that same old, tired old, dirty old lying hustle about this being the greatest country in the world? Note to right-wingers. The greatest country in the world doesn't create a situation where 600 poor people have to line up at midnight in 10-degree weather to get medical, dental, and vision attention that they would not otherwise get. Right? Yeah. So thanks to Kate for the note. Now, I would also be remiss if I didn't point out that the responses have continued to roll in all night and into today regarding our entirely Democratic poll that will determine whether or not I am ever complained at again over our discussion of the sickness that goes by the name religion. Let's see here. I got a note on Facebook from Michael. It just says, "Bob, just listening to last night's podcast, here's my vote." And it's a photograph of a woman holding a poster at some sort of protest. And the message on the poster reads as follows. My son told me today that he is gay. I was so relieved. I thought he was going to tell me he wanted to be a priest or some perverted shit like that. So, I think we will add Michael to the list. And there have been dozens upon dozens upon dozens. If I started reading the emails that have come in the last 21 hours, we would not get much else in. But they're there, in their multitude, and they all say pretty much the same thing. Don't stop. Don't stop. Dr. John, for instance, caught up with the discussion. He said, for what it's worth, don't change anything. You're not attacking believers or regular people of faith. You go after hypocrisy and power, and you connect dots between church and state that don't get connected anywhere else. The church is like the state, an institution that has emerged to channel, control, and appropriate people's social needs. In the former, it's a need to explain the unknown. In the latter, it's a need to govern for the greater good. And by the way, the first half of yesterday's program was out of this world. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. John. But of all the oodles of notes we received, this is the one, and it came in right at the end of showtime. Well, wait. One more to check in on here. Right before this other one that I've mentioned came in, Robert wrote from Australia, I'd like to continue as we are. I dislike censorship. No topic or group should be immune or excluded from discussion. But this one came in about the same time, and I found it deeply, deeply moving. It came from our dear friend Beth, down in Texas. She wrote as follows. As you know, Bob, for me, it's like this. As you know, my work involves providing abortion care in Texas, a state whose government even now teeters on the verge of becoming effectively a theocracy. In addition to official state oppression, that means that I encounter daily personal harassment in the name of God, that I have been stalked in the name of God, that I have been threatened with death in the name of God, that my friends and colleagues here and elsewhere in this land of the free have been stabbed, shot, firebombed, and even murdered in church, and all in the name of God. All of that has had everything to do with perverted forms of fundamentalist Christianity, both Catholic and Protestant, and nothing to do with God. One of my sons-in-law, Jose, is an evangelical pastor. We have lived in the same house for 18 years, since even before he married my daughter. He left his own extended family to become part of our own when my husband suffered a devastating brain injury and needed around-the-clock care, and we needed Jose's help to care for him. Jose never hesitated. He cared for his father-in-law like a son, and made it possible for my husband, who was completely paralyzed and unable even to speak, to spend the remaining years of his life feeling loved and surrounded by his family, instead of wasting away in some Medicaid nursing home. Jose maintains an arduous full-time job because he'll never make a living being a pastor. That's because he feeds the hungry, visits the sick, and takes care of the other needs of his congregation when someone loses a job or has other unexpected problems. All he says about abortion is that since the Lord didn't see fit to mention it, it isn't his own place to put words in his mouth, and that he knows I help women. Needless to say, I love him as if he were my own son, because in every way that matters, he is. Of course, I do not share all of Jose's beliefs, but they're a large part of what makes him the wonderful man he is. If all of the clergy were anything like Jose, and I'm sure many others who share his qualities, I'd have no quarrel with their churches. But of course, they are not. So keep on giving them hell. Signed, Beth. And when I read that last night after the show, I wrote back to Beth and I said, I'm going to give the old minister a rest tomorrow night for prayer meeting Wednesday. And I am instead going to let your note stand in place of the shtick that I do most every Wednesday night. Don't you agree with the choice? Kind of hard to avoid. I think you all would have made the same choice. Because that's a reflection of reality. And we still stand at, oh, Jesus, I lost count. One little, two, little three. Well, there's only one no vote. So we'll keep on. And we will have no more stop this right now. Because this is uncensored radio, unfettered, and reality-driven. Speaking of reality, and since it is prayer meeting, and because if there is a deity out there, it is the goddess of irony, we need to discuss the case of the Amish cult leader who declared other non-cult member Amish to be heretics and sent out a barbering squad. Really? A barbering squad. A terroristic barbering squad. You know, really, the Amish are the only ones that you could come up with. Well, maybe not the only ones, but somehow or another, terrorism in the heartland. Amish barbers. Right? The story goes back to last week. It's been in the hopper for a while. The leader of the cult has received 15 years in prison for leading a group that went out in the dark and still of the night, restrained their religious enemies, cut their hair, and shaved their beards. As Beth said in her note, in the name of God. It put me in the mind, the story did, of this. Because, you know, everything puts me in the mind of, I guess you could say he's my hero. Up there with Vonnegut and Twain. Because some people just manifest, some characters just manifest a sort of American perfection. And this is one of those moments. Almost.
Welcome to my shop. Let me cut your mop. Let me save your crop. Daintily, daintily. Hey, don't look so perplexed. Why must you be vexed? Can't you see you're next? Yes, you're next. You're so next. How about a nice close-shave? Teach your whiskers to behave. Lots of lather, lots of soap. Please hold still, don't be a dope. Now we're ready for the scraping. There's no use to try escaping. Yell and scream and rant and rave. It's no use, you need a shave.
Ooh, ouch, ouch, ooh, ouch, ooh, ooh, ouch.
Hey, you're nice and clean. Although your face looks like it might have gone through a machine.
Where do I get that
wabbit? What would you want with a wabbit?
Yeah, we've gotten to the part where Bugs is in drag, so we can... The religion industry has actually reached a place in time and in space where it resembles where religious terrorism in this country, honest to God, resembles a Bugs Bunny cartoon. This Amish freak was sending his barbering squads out because the Amish believe that when a man reaches manhood and a woman reaches womanhood, that they may no longer cut their hair. The man may not cut his beard and the woman may not cut her hair. And that God won't like them if they do. Because, you know, that's the kind of God they worship. A God that judges people based upon their hirsuteness. Go figure. At the time of the arrest, about 120 others lived on the farm with the leader of the cult. Remember, we talked a little bit about cults last night. They took the case all the way to trial because they were morons. They could have had a plea deal. But no, God liked them and was going to see to their war. Right. So now, the leader of the cult and the members of his cult are going to spend 15 years hard time in the federal stir because they couldn't live and play well with others. One of the allegations was that part of this cult had to do with the fact that the leader of the cult felt like he had the right to tell the women in the cult that God wanted them to have sex with him. Really? God does that kind of thing? Hair, beards, sex? The creator of the universe? The grand watchmaker that set everything in motion? Has time to look down on a little indistinct planet in a backwater corner of the Milky Way galaxy and go, no, you know what? He's not getting enough. Hey, yeah, you, down there. Tell the women, I said for them to have sex with you. Now the fun part. Like I said, there's the goddess of irony is involved here. Remember, this is a story about cutting hair, shaving beards. And the cult leader's name was Sam Mullet. And God made a hypocrite. Sam Mullet. Couldn't make that up if I tried. It's really and for true. Sam Mullet, cutter of heretic hair, barber of undogmatic beards. The stupid. It hurts as us. But it's just another day in religion. It's just another day in organized faith. And so now, Brother Mullet, you be careful among those English in the prison. According to the news story, now that he's in the federal stir, he's already, quote, stood up to a posse of tough guys in the cafeteria, befriended a feared murderer, protected a gay inmate, and charmed, yes, the word is charmed, the thugs and gang members in his cell block by singing traditional Amish hymns after lights out. The inmates there on the cell block have taken to calling him OG.
I don't know what it means, Brother Mullet said, but I guess it means something good.
Sweet Jesus. And then there's the, since it is prayer meeting Wednesday. Last night, oh, by the way, great minds do think alike. Got a note from Marty at the beginning of the show. All caps. Please, Bob, I beg you, no clips from the State of the Union. I've heard enough from Sandler and Hartman. Well, okay. No, truthfully, I had no plans to play any clips from the State of the Union. And I don't have it in me to listen to Marco. I did a 10-foot line of coke before I got here in front of the lights, and now I'm, yeah, John Boner looked like a tweaker last night, and Rubio, you know, Marco Rubio really was doing that. Like he'd just gotten out of the club and they'd just cut out a 10-foot line of really top-grade Peruvian flake in front of him, or Bolivian marching powder, or, you know. He'd gone skiing on his sinuses. So, no, there won't be any clips from the State of the Union. But Marty, I resent the fact that just because Nicole and Hartman get to him first, I don't get to play them. Well, lucky for us all, I don't need him. We don't need him. Because we've got other stuff. You might recall that back at the time of the Newtown Massacre, that there was a vigil. And it was a vigil that was attended by all faiths. One of the people who participated in the praying and so forth that the religious folks were doing there was the Reverend Rob Morris. Now, the Reverend Rob Morris is pastor of Christ the King Lutheran Church. Is there a lesson in this? Yes, there is. I said Lutheran Church. I did not say the first herpetological seminary and Baptist font of baptizing. No, I didn't. We're not talking about Baptists or Pentecostals or floor rollers or tongue speakers or strychnine. No. These are Lutherans. They're supposed to be normal and respectable. They got over their heretic tormenting centuries ago. Although they were rather good at it for a while, we must admit. But they had a great teacher, Mother Church. The Calvinists did it too. But these are Lutherans. And the lesson is that fundamentalism poisons everything. Because in point of fact, the Reverend Rob Morris prayed at the vigil that was held on the Sunday after the December 14th massacre. He did his praying, as did other Christian clerics, as did Muslim clerics, as did Jewish clerics, as did a member of the Baha'i clergy. And you know what? If you've got a problem with Baha'i, you've got a problem with the universe. Really? Baha'i? Now here's the backstory. Christ the King Lutheran Church belongs to something called the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, S-Y-N-O-D. It's one of those organizational breakdowns that were introduced probably by Constantine. Constantine created the idea of dioceses, and he didn't do it for the church. No, it was his predecessor, Diocletian. Or was it Vespasian? Damn, those emperors tend to run together. But the one who, toward that late part, he realized that the empire was just too big for one megalomaniacal ruler to manage. And so he broke it down into administrative divisions that he called dioceses. And they were strictly civil in nature, but the church, when it glommed on to Byzantine civilization and then began expanding toward Rome, and that is the way it worked, and all that business about the See of St. Peter and upon this, it's malarkey, it's baloney. It's just not true. It is ahistorical, I suppose. But out of those civil society reforms of the 4th century of the current era, the church then went on to create, or to glom onto, to Bogart, if you will, the administrative structure. So you wind up with things like dioceses and synods and other strange words. So Christ the King Lutheran Church is a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And it turns out that they're a bunch of weirdos. Gang of freaks, absolutely. Because, among other things, their constitution, the constitution of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod says that its ministers are forbidden, verboten, I mean, this is Lutheranism, right? From participating in any religious services with any member of a different faith. You got that? The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod finds it to be sinful to pray together with other faiths. This was a prayer vigil. There was no altar call. It was merely a reaching out in the spirit of what Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant rabbi, said people ought to be doing. Comforting people in their hour of grief and agony. But the members of Christ the King Lutheran Church of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod couldn't tolerate that. And so the Reverend Rob Morris, who gets his paycheck from Christ the King Lutheran Church of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the hell does Missouri have to do with Connecticut? He gets his paycheck there, and so when the heat went up, the Reverend Rob Morris had to apologize for praying next to Muslims and Jews. The vigil was hosted by the Newtown Interfaith Clergy Association. It was attended by Connecticut Governor Daniel Malloy and President Obama. And even though the person who opened the event said, "We are not here to ignore our differences or to diminish the core beliefs which define our many different faith traditions," even though that caveat was offered at the front end, that was not enough for the membership, you know, the deacons and presbyters and exalted noble pish-poshes and whatever of the Christ the King Lutheran Church of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, wasn't enough. And the Reverend Rob Morris had to write a letter of apology for being there next to, you know, those people. The ones who are gonna fry and crackle like little pork cracklings in hell. "After consultation with my supervisors and others, I made my own decision. I believed my participation to be not an act of joint worship, but an act of community chaplaincy." Nonetheless, he apologized. Isn't that just sad? The president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is one Matthew Harrison. And he got his maiden forms all in a bunch. And wrote a letter that said, absence of prayers and religious readings from, you know, those Muslims and those Jews and those Baha'i people, that because they addressed the teachings of their own faiths into the common vat of agony, that no proper Lutheran pastor could be there with them. How sick is that? How disgusting is that? Remember Avery Schreiber? Wasn't that his name? Made a series of hilarious Doritos commercials back in the perhaps late 70s and early 80s. Kind of had one of those delightful comic faces. And yeah, that's what Lutheran Church Missouri Synod President Matthew Harrison looks like. Matthew Harrison initially determined that Rob Morris's participation left an opening for false teaching to corrupt the blessed faithful of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod members of Christ the King Lutheran Church. I mean, you want to hear some sickening stuff? This is the letter that they made the Reverend Morris write. To my brothers and sisters in Christ, I begin with words of deepest thanks for all the many outpourings of support we at Christ the King Lutheran Church, Newtown, Connecticut, have received in the wake of the shootings on December 14th. The trauma of that day is immeasurable and is continuing to be played out in our emotions and daily lives, individually as a congregation within our community. And yet, as we celebrated Epiphany, Christ's light shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. One of the ways Christ has given his light into this darkness has been through all of your support, and for that we are unspeakably grateful, both to him and to you. Actually, the unspeakable part is coming. Many have expressed their thoughts of how difficult it must be to administer Christ's grace and truth in such a situation, but I have a little different take. It is indeed an unspeakably difficult situation. Emotions are raw, energy reserves are spent, fear and mistrust are far too easy, and all of us are faced with circumstances for which no amount of training or preparation could be sufficient. And yet the only thing that makes ministering under these circumstances possible is Christ's grace and truth. All else is a false hope, a hollow comfort. He's talking about the Muslims and the Jews and the Baha'i. Maybe the Catholics. Possibly the Baptists. Thus, it was a gift of God, even within these dark and tear-filled times, to announce the certainty of Christ's birth, our God with us, not only 2,000 years ago, but within each of us through our baptism. The certainty of Christ's resurrection and our adoption into Him through His Word and Sacrament is the only possible message of hope and peace within these dark times, both in Newtown and around the world. That means you, Muslims. You listening, Jews? Hey, wake up, Baha'i people. Put down the pipe. Ministering is hard, but ministering Christ's grace is a gift, no matter the circumstances. Now you'd think Nero was there shoving a spike up his butt to turn him into a little torchlight for the Vatican Gardens. No matter the circumstances. With that in mind, some have expressed concern, and in some cases public rebuke, that my participation in the televised prayer vigil on Sunday night has hindered our ability to speak this Christian truth into a pluralistic culture. The fear is that by sharing the stage with false teachers, you got that, Rabbi?
paying attention, Imam?
I have diminished the proclamation of the truth, which is ours by grace through faith in Christ. Next time somebody wants to talk about Muslim fundamentalists, let's just talk about Reverend Rob Morris instead. Can we do that? He goes on. No sin, even my own sinful failures, can destroy the church or the gospel. Hey. One of my favorite hymns in the Lutheran service book, we powerfully proclaim that built on the rock, the church shall stand, even when steeples are falling. We need not live in fear that Christ's gospel will be damaged, for even Satan cannot accomplish that. Because, you know, it's all false teaching. Notice how he equates Satan with the aforementioned Muslims, Jews, and Baha'i? We do have a God-given responsibility to be on our guard against all kinds of false teaching. Prior to the events of 1214, I had already spent hours with my own congregation catechizing them as to the differences between our Lutheran understanding of scriptural teaching, the various other denominations' teachings, and the teachings of false religions such as Islam or Baha'i.
Yeah, kind of dodging the Jews there, aren't you, a little bit there, Reverend Rob?
I'd likewise spent time with my fellow clergy in Newtown, clarifying the ways I can and cannot engage in events like joint clergy dialogues, which are good to engage in, joint caring efforts only within limits.
Really? Joint caring efforts are only within limits when that's one of the things that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer itinerant rabbi of that faith you say is so full of false teaching, said was among the most important things to do?
To those who believe that I have endorsed false teaching, I assure you that was not in my intent. Hey, baby. All liability's based on fault. Intent ain't got nothing to do with it.
You're going to fry, Rob. You're going to cook. Devil going to just throw you in a pot of boiling oil because you done wallered around with them false teaching Baha'i Islam Jewish people.
I don't know if you can get forgive for that. I believe my participation to be not an act of joint worship, but an act of community chaplaincy. Right, because he was standing up on there on the stage when the imam was praying, and he had his fingers in his ears, and he was like,
not listening, not listening, la 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 la, can't hear your false god, la 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 la, can't hear your false teaching, na 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 na.
I simply say to any pastor who finds themselves in a similar situation,
and I pray that none will ever have to stand on a stage and listen to the false teachings of Baha'i and Islam and Judaism, even if they're reaching out trying to offer comfort in a moment of complete and utter agony. I hope none will.
You will have my unswerving, prayerful support, and I encourage you to do all that you can to ensure that you faithfully proclaim the grace that ours is ours in Jesus Christ alone. Jesus wept. Well, actually, there's a good ending. Because that whole letter was so sickening, so disgusting, so utterly devoid of anything resembling the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant rabbi, that even members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod found themselves gagging on their cuds. And that's when That's when the guy who looks like the Doritos guy, Matthew Harrison. Well, that's when he realized he went in it. Here's Matthew Harrison, in lieu of some clips from the State of the Union.
Hi, I'm Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Got a Dorito?
A few months ago, I and several friends were sitting around a fire pit outside of a hotel.
Yeah, that's where you're going to burn.
Fall conference. A man came up and sat down with us and started dropping expletives.
I mean, you'd burn there if there really was a hell. I'm just saying.
And after a while...
Wait, his delicate ears were shocked because a man... Well,
sitting around a fire pit outside of a hotel in Florida at fall conference. A man came up and sat down with us and started dropping expletives. And after a while, he asked us, "So what do all of you do?" And we smirked a bit at each other, and I said, "We're all pastors." And he slunk down sheepishly. But then we said, "We're pastors from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod." And he said, "Really? You people are the real deal. You cleaned out my house last week. It was destroyed by Superstorm Sandy."
That's beautiful. That's just beautiful.
I guess he wasn't a Muslim or a Baha'i.
That was an amazing moment, and we had a chance to share the gospel with him. I've had so many opportunities to participate in the great moments of the Missouri Synod. Now, I've participated in one of the worst moments of the Missouri Synod. Just after the terrible tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, the pastor of our congregation there, Christ the King, Pastor Morris...
See, this guy's kind of the Missouri Synod Pope. I mean, he doesn't have to observe that silliness about not getting married or anything, and there's nothing there to suggest that he's been buggering little boys. But, no, I mean, he runs the show. His word is law, right?
Participated in a joint prayer vigil / service for the community, and it was nationally televised. Immediately, criticism began to ring out in the Synod, but also praise.
But I didn't listen to the praise. I listened to the criticism. And when I'm calling one of my underlings on the carpet... I don't use this little sermonette voice here. No, I bellow and I tell them about the demon fires of hell.
It's a very challenging issue for us. Within hours of this becoming public, negative criticism and debate was appearing on at least two well-known websites and discussion sites in the Synod. For the first time ever, I contacted both of those sites and said, "Please, take this down. The congregation and the pastor does not need it."
Oh, so he contacted them and said, "Stop criticizing the church." Okay. Go ahead, Matt.
And Pastor Yeadon, president of the district, Pastor Morris, would need time to work through this. And we as a synod need to work through it in a much more positive way than we had done 10 years earlier. In the course of the time that followed, the month or two, Pastor Yeadon and I and Pastor Morris had constant conversation. And
I'll bet they did. And Buster, you like catching them checks, don't you? Get in line! Straighten up!
Dialogue, it was always cordial and...
Oh, yeah, it was cordial, all right.
Kind. I thought that it would be best for Pastor Morris... to apologize and say, "Yes, I offended."
Yeah, I offended. By reaching out ecumenically and trying to offer comfort in the spirit of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant rabbi, I thought he offended. By doing Christy stuff, he offended. Right.
I support the Synod's constitution and bylaws, and that's what I'm called to uphold. I also am called to lead this church kindly and mercifully and winsomely. Pastor Morris issued a very kind apology, not for participating. He was quite convinced that what he did was correct, but he did apologize for the offense given, and it was given to some in our synod.
You know, Matt, can I call you Matt? Because I don't think you've got any special relationship to God that entitles you to be called Reverend or Pastor or Your Holiness or Your Excellency or Grand Bapu. Matt, you're sitting there in front of a bunch of books. Probably got a lot of words in them. You're the offense. You're the offense. This thing goes on for 6 more minutes of this self-justifying wallowing. When the real easy answer is to say, you know, we didn't do a very good job of being Christ-like there now, did we? And maybe, and those members of the Lutheran Missouri, the Lutheran Synod Missouri, whatever, the 23, 35, what? You know, they probably need to get out and go join, I don't know, the Westboro Baptists or something, because their lives are devolved and consumed in hate. Now, we're going to talk. I'm not going to play any State of the Union clips. Not even going to play. And it's radio, so I can't show you the classic moment from the Republican response when, just as he was talking about stealing Social Security and Medicare, Marco Rubio began to gag as if the invisible God himself had him around the neck and began reaching desperately for water. Like a sinner reaching through the gates of hell to someone teasing them with ice cubes. No, I can't do that. That's video. But there is some stuff to talk about out of the State of the Union. Lord God knows there's a bunch of other stuff that's out there today. Wayne LaPierre has gone absolutely, well, we only thought he had gone around the bend. He really has now. I mean, this is somebody that ought to be chased with a net and a Thorazine dart gun. I'll stay back here in the bush while Jim takes his tranquilizer dart gun and goes out and takes down Wayne LaPierre before he can hurt anybody else. So we got that. Dr. Paul Brown is back. So too is a teacher in Indiana. She's back into the classroom, even after having said something utterly disgusting and hateful. Oh yeah, there's plenty to talk about. As Sandra pointed out to me in a tweet, and as I tweeted last night, what was that in the State of the Union about that? What was that line about modern pipelines? I felt like somebody grabbed me by the scruff of the neck when I heard that one. Got on there and started tweeting, hey, 350, did you hear the modern pipeline line? You got cold chills? I got cold chills. Smells kind of Keystone-y to me. So we'll take a little break on this prayer meeting Wednesday, which also happens to kind of be doubling as a Friday on the front porch. Plane takes off, and it's snowing here, by the way. I don't like that. Plane takes off about somewhere after the 7 o'clock hour in the morning. I'll be back, hopefully, like I said, in time for Monday night's show. And the other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to try to take with me a little video camera and a laptop and see if we can't also stream the panel discussion this coming Saturday. Hope to see a little bit more of the countryside and the part of Wisconsin that's threatened with all of this disastrous extraction on Friday. Talk to anybody that's willing to listen. If you're in Wisconsin, come on down. Now, there's going to be a lot of good stuff going on Saturday. Just look up the date and Lac Coeur d'Orée. You'll find the details you need. But anyway, let's take a break. And for those of you who can, let's take a few steps toward meeting that really, really bold matching contribution that came in from Donald. Thank you. Buttons at PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the snail mail address. Snail mail works, too. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Checks, money orders, things like that. Don't make them payable to Bob Kincaid, please. Make them payable to The Horn, Head On Communications, Head On Radio Network, something like that. Thanks. This is listener-supported conversation. It's on the Internet. That means it's the future of progressive media. And we've been living in the future for 10 years. Only because of you. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Okay. We hear a lot of talk about the ecumenical movement. They say that we should get together and all be one big family. Catholic, Protestant, and Jew, Buddhist, Muslim, and Hindu. I guess they want the devil too in the ecumenical movement. They always talk about the golden rule and the Sermon on the Mount. But whether you've ever been born again doesn't even count. I know my sins are all forgiven, and I am on my way to heaven. My trust is in the Lord and not the ecumenical movement. It's modern now to talk about the ecumenical movement. The old time way's not good enough, it all must be forgotten. The Virgin's birth, the Trinity, the blood of Christ on Calvary. They've made a better way, you see, through the ecumenical movement. They always talk about the golden rule and the Sermon on the Mount. But whether you've ever been born again,
people said. Amen. Thank you, Robin.
It's your second hour liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, that little song gets them every time. This is the Horn, Bob Kincaid. Wednesday, prayer meeting, 13th of February, 2013. Michael Wright again. Effing creepy. I've heard you play this before, and it's creepier each time. This has got to be the creepiest song in your library. Good God. Oh, don't tempt me, Michael. Get thee behind me, Michael. Because the same day, those little girls performed that little tune there at the old-time gospel hour for the Reverend Jerry Falwell, who, if there was a hell, would be a-roasting in it. They performed this one, too. Okay. See what happened, Michael?
The parents. Jerry is accompanying Robin and Crystal as they sing, but this is a happy song. A song that they sang in the Sunday morning service that was televised nationwide. We had so many requests for them to do it again that that's exactly what they did.
And by the way, Crystal and Robin, Crystal is Crystal Bernard. You remember the show Wings back in the 90s? Yeah, the love interest for one of the pilots. Yeah, that Crystal Bernard. Just since it's prayer meeting Wednesday, I'm going to continue with this simply because it sort of drives home the point from Dr. John's note last night about Charles Darwin and his birthday. And you know how we said there's an IQ, that Charles Darwin is just really perfect 21st century IQ test to find out whether or not someone is civilized or not? Yeah. Well, this is that.
The monkey song. It's their answer to the ridiculous theory of evolution. So right now, by the miracle of recording, Robin and Crystal Bernard.
You got that? The miracle of recording? That's not science. That's a miracle. You press play and record on the little box that's got the reel-to-reel on it, and it could maybe record something, or maybe it would make monkeys fly out of people's butts, or maybe it would send demons screaming through the congregation. It's a miracle. Recording is a miracle. Holy cow, we're doing a miracle right now, because the button says recording. Mysterious are the ways.
Singing a song that probably you haven't heard before, but I'm sure after you hear it this time, you'll want to be hearing it again.
Doesn't Jerry Falwell just sound like the voice of Satan, if there was a Satan?
I don't know of any better way than just to call it what it is. It's the monkey song, and it's about the monkey theory, the ridiculous theory of evolution that refutes the Bible account of creation. Robin and Crystal Bernard.
I'm no kin to the monkey, no, no, no. The monkey's no kin to me, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know much about his ancestors, but mine didn't swing from a tree. It seems so unbelievable, and yet they're saying it's true. They're teaching us about it in school now, that humans were monkeys once too. Whoa, I'm no kin to the monkey, no, no, no. The monkey's no kin to me, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know much about his ancestors, but mine didn't swing from a tree. Although it's so ridiculous, they're teaching us now that it's true. The teachers that came from a monkey would be better off in the zoo. Whoa.
much more believable. And surely, surely it's true that God made man in his image. No monkey story will do. Whoa, I'm no kin to the monkey, no, no, no. The monkey's no kin to me, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know much about his ancestors, but mine didn't swing from a tree. This monkey business has to go, because it just isn't true. It's such a disgrace to the monkey, a disgrace to the human race too. Whoa, I'm no kin to the monkey, no, no, no. The monkey's no kin to me, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know much about his ancestors, but mine didn't swing from a tree. Mine didn't swing from a tree.
Sing it.
Mine didn't swing from a tree.
Amen. Did you hear Falwell kind of grunting and groaning right ape-like in the background there? Yeah, me too. Michael, you brought that on yourself. Yes, in response to a question, yes, the Skype lines are open, as are the phone lines. See, that's a dial tone. Hot diggity, I'm so tickled. Bob Kincaid Horn is the Skype contact, if you want to jump into the conversation. Last chance for a couple of days. So by all means, let's use these this hour and 45 minutes or so wisely. Marty chiming in. So much for the concept of we're all God's children. Well, you know, they are. Us, not so much. Beth writing in, Jesus would know what to do with the mats of the world. You know, Pastor Matt there of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. The words of the Amen, the faithful, the true witness, the beginning of God's creation. I know your works. You are neither cold nor hot. Would that you were either cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither cold, hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. That would be Yeshua, had he been present, spitting out the inadequate maunderings of ostensible Christians, such as the non-reverend Matt. Nothing could be more lukewarm than pablum. And all God's children said, Amen. I love that echo effect. So, consider, that song is maybe, what, 35 years old, 40 years old or so. That comes out of the old-time gospel hour, when Jerry Falwell was just an up-and-coming hypocrite. But that mindset is alive and well, and is probably stronger now in this country today than it was then. Because they hadn't, the assault on scientific education hadn't really gotten up and running yet. But now it's got its shoes on, and it is, and they're not shoes, baby, they're boots, and they are marching all over this country. International listeners, our friends in other countries, if you just play that for some of your neighbors sometime, see how they respond to it and say, yeah, that's America. That's what America sounds like. A majority of Americans reject the idea of natural selection, reject those brilliant scientific discoveries advanced by Charles Darwin, so eloquently described last night by Dr. John. They reject them out of hand. It's not that they're ambivalent. It's not that they are lukewarm. They are hot on fire about it. And they are certain that their ancestors didn't swing from a tree. And even a phrase like that tells you how ignorant they are. They are, those songs are offensive, Psychoticus.
They're offensive to anybody with a working brain. They're offensive to anybody who prefers the use of the verbs I know or I think to the verb I believe. They're desperately offensive. Nasty. Because they reject everything we understand about the world we live in and seek to replace it with magic. You know, where recording is a miracle. I guess if recording is a miracle, flipping on the light switch is a miracle. I don't want to live in a world of miracles, do you? I much prefer a world where natural processes follow laws. Instead of miracles. At any rate, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy, what's up?
Hey, I thought I'd call and try out something that I did this week. Since it's prayer meeting Wednesday, I figured this would fit in somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
I listen to this show sometimes at night. It's a little bit like Coast to Coast AM, so it's kind of conspiracy theory, kind of just some wingnut things, but I find it entertaining somebody to listen to. So a few nights ago, someone was on the show as a guest, and they claimed they had been channeling a spirit for 40 years and bringing forth its messages, had a name and everything. And of course, this person could never give a direct answer about anything, about what this thing was telling or passing on from its knowledge and wherever it was. So I figured I'd call up and just be a menace on the show, and I did. I called in and asked them if this so-called spirit, whatever she was channeling, had ever mentioned about people, like certain reverends, the Westboro Baptist Church, people like that who take the message that this Jesus person once gave and twist it to their own cynical views. She couldn't give an answer.
No, of course not.
Surprise, surprise. I mean, I wasn't dumbfounded. I expected that fully because they never can give a direct answer, and that's what I call bullshit on what they're doing.
And they took that how?
I didn't say bullshit. I mean, I kind of said, well, this kind of proves a point about a lot of people. They have doubts on this thing. When you people can't give direct answers because you give the old excuse that whatever these entities are that you are imagining you're talking to or pretending you are, can never interfere with human people and change the course of whatever's going on in their lives. Just give them basic knowledge.
And I think that's probably, well, it's too much to ask. You know, I've been deep in, I read history in phases or in fits and starts, and I've been trying to better my education on the Lincoln era lately. And Mrs. Lincoln, and you have to understand, she was horrified. Who would not be? She had lost two sons, and she lost the second of her young sons while they were in the White House. And she began seeing a spiritualist. And in the midst of the horrors of the Civil War, it had become quite the craze in Washington for grief-stricken members of the family members to try to find out what was going on with their beloveds, you know, on the other side.
I know this is going, Bob. you're probably going to talk about the photo she had taken with Abraham Lincoln behind her.
Well, there's that, but no, it was actually going somewhere else. That was 1862. Okay? Well,
right.
Fast forward 120 years. Nancy Reagan, 120 years later, and in those intervening 120 years, let's see, we've got Madame Curie discovering radiation, we've got the invention of radio, we've got the introduction of flight, we've got literally quantum leaps in physics, and 120 years later, Nancy Reagan is bringing a spiritualist into the White House to advise her on propitious times for her husband, the president, to engage in momentous decisions affecting hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people on this planet. It's a little depressing, Jeremy.
That's depressing. I mean, I've heard several quotes from a Jimmy Carter biography. I think it was his own writing, so it wasn't just someone writing for him, that the White House, and surprise, surprise, the CIA had used something they like to call, what is it called? It's basically, it's almost like seeing with a drone, only you do it in your mind. Basically, a special word for it. But he himself said that it was the most amazing thing he's ever seen in his life, and the CIA used it, basically gave credit to it, and used it.
Oh, dear God.
Something, it's almost like second sight. It's like basically using psychics to say, this is where this is, almost like the weapons of mass destruction are in that bunker over there. That type of thing.
Yeah.
And he said it actually came true a couple times. Hey, a stop clock's like twice a day, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there's a possibility some of these guesses can be right. On that second topic, I was wondering if you had heard, there's a story that broke a little while ago about a family who was discovered living in the tiger forest in Russia.
No.
I guess back prior to World War II, there was lots of religious persecution to people in Russia. I'm guessing they were probably of Jewish faith or something similar, something which the Nazi party probably was not liking too much. Well, anyway, this family took off into the woods of the tiger forest, and for all everyone knew, they were gone and had disappeared. They were never seen again. Fast forward to, I want to say, this is an older story, I just heard about it not too long ago, say the mid-90s, a group of Russian scientists were flying over the tiger forest, and they were 150 miles from civilization. And lo and behold, they looked down and saw a big clearing. It was the middle of summer, or it was probably either late fall or something, and they said, my God, it's a garden. There's someone out here. They couldn't believe it. So they came back, I want to say, the next spring or something, because like I said, it was a changing season. It was too hard to get there at that time by foot. And they walked into this place, and there was a little hut made of sticks, stones, and whatever they could throw together where this family had been living for almost 70 years. They didn't even know World War II had happened.
Wow.
Kids spoke Russian, but it was a different dialect because they'd never been exposed to vocal patterns of normal Russian speaking or different areas of their dialect. So the parents could understand them. The scientists could somewhat understand their broken language.
Yeah, and Jim advises me that, yeah, the term we're talking about is remote viewing.
Yes, remote viewing, yes. That's exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
And they were basically a living time capsule, these people.
They're a living time capsule. They didn't know about satellites or anything like that. I mean, eventually people were bringing things on, like little camcorders and stuff like that. We had them in the 90s with Sheldon. He was fascinated with them. And in fact, they told him there were satellites above. And the dad said, well, I didn't think it wasn't anything that man hadn't put up there because he noticed some stars flying by rather fast as time went on. So he knew there were things up there. The sad part about this story is that within 5 years of being discovered, they all died of natural causes brought to them by people, diseases and germs, because they weren't exposed to people for 70 years.
Oh, my God.
But it was just a remarkable story that these people survived in the woods without pots or pans, electricity, flushing water, you name it, tools. Their tools all rotted away and rusted away. They brought pots and pans.
Well, they were, I mean, but that's not so surprising, Jeremy, because they're humans. They're humans.
No, it's not surprising if you look back at like cavemen and stuff like that. Yes, I know we did it at one point in our distant past. So it's not surprising. It's something you don't hear about every day. It kind of catches you off guard here about this family who basically lived outside the bounds of what society says you can do for 70 years and never saw a person for 70 years.
Well, it tells you that at least that there is a little bit left of the world, if not unspoiled, not particularly traversed.
Yeah.
Similar to the Amazon, but on the way home today I was listening to a story on National Petroleum Radio about how Brazil is absolutely beside themselves to create new energy matrices and are damming rivers left and right trying to keep up with the electrical demand. And, you know, to their credit, they're not going for oil or gas or coal. But by the same token, their hydroelectric activities are having a devastating effect on the people who live in those areas. You know, issues of displacement, issues of habitat destruction.
Right.
And we're gonna see more and more of this, and the world is going to continue shrinking. The story from Monday about the people in southern Ecuador in the El Condor region. You know, I guess one of the questions we are compelled to answer is that if we're going to catalog human rights, does one of those human rights, Jeremy, include the right to be left the hell alone by the corporatists?
I like to think so, but they still seem to dominate our lives. I remember not too long, I was in high school, almost 15 years ago now, and I was doing a report on pollution in the Amazon, and they came across a picture of probably about, I'd say, 200 to 500 drums of oil just stacked on the floor of the Amazon rainforest, but they're all leaking. And right on the side of them, they said ExxonMobil.
Sure. Sure, because the world is ExxonMobil and Royal Dutch Shell and BP's and everybody. The world is their dump. We have to understand that all the way down to the flats of our feet. We are in their way. They have an absolute right to poison anything they want, kill anyone they want, as long as it increases their profits. You know, Marco Rubio, in between gagging for water last night, blithered on about the miracle of the free market some more. And I've gotten to where I can't even hear that without just coming unglued. And right. What was the line? There was some palaver in there about, from our earliest days, we were founded on notions of liberty. Please, save me.
And not that it helps any, but today I passed something along on social media to anyone that follows or watches my post about how John Miller's already shot down a chance at an increase in the minimum wage because it'll affect small businesses. So I decided to stop counting the no's coming from here on out.
Yep. Yep. Well, the pipeline mentioned last night.
That shivers down my spine.
Yeah, because it was just thrown out there blithely. We need more modern pipelines. What? How many other modern pipelines are under so-called modern pipelines are under discussion right now?
Yeah, but did you hear him? He says it so calm and smoothly. Since he's a good speaker like Clinton was, sometimes he can slide them in there to be unwilling to hear what he's actually saying. Again, he said for about the 10th time he said it in his administration, we're going to find ways to burn coal and burn gas and natural gas.
Did he say coal last night? I thought I didn't hear the word coal.
I'm pretty sure he said coal. He slipped in on natural gas to find ways to burn them cleaner and better for the environment.
Well, right, and increase, you know, all that business about increasing natural gas drilling on public lands, that was nothing but frack, baby, frack.
Exactly. He didn't want to say that.
And what I tweeted at the time, Jeremy, was that frack, baby, frack is not energy policy, it's a suicide pact.
Right. The only one he didn't mention this time was nuclear power. I didn't hear that last time.
No, I did not hear that. And you know, he made a lot of happy noises about wind and solar. But until we actively, and then he proposed that fund to purchase, you know, to further the advancement of the future renewables. You know, okay, but you know what? That will not counteract rising sea levels and rising temperatures, desalination of the oceans, the wholesale change of the Gulf Stream. No funds will change that. Just like putting a right wing lawyer who's been involved in voter suppression from the time he got off the tit on a commission to fix voting problems in this country is not going to fix voting problems in this country.
Didn't he also say something about speeding up the permit processing for new drilling rigs?
I think there was something about... Yeah, I think there was.
Yeah, that was put in right after the burn clean coal better statement, I think. I remember that happened. But yeah, just like, he does this stuff all the time, and...
Right.
He's a better choice than the alternative, but in the end, he's really just another one of them separated by a few small things, which he mentions.
which in many cases are distinctions without a difference, I'm afraid. I mean, right. What's the difference? What's the difference between the Keystone XL pipeline permitted by Willard Romney and the Keystone XL pipeline permitted by Barack Obama? Now, I'm sitting here assuming that the Keystone XL pipeline is going to be permitted because of that modern pipeline language. Yeah. Meanwhile, the Sierra Club and the fine folks at 350, Bill McKibben and his associates, are trying to bring together something on the order of 20,000 people on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. on February the 17th. I'm not going to be there, but I wish them well. I support the effort wholeheartedly. I wish it was a million people, because that's a million people who bring their tents and don't leave.
I don't know if you happen to have seen it, but a picture did get passed around within the last couple of days of an activist who snuck down to a Keystone pipeline building site and was able to get inside the pipe. And he went a distance in, so it was all dark. But when he went in, so it was so dark, you could see sunlight coming in. There's a little ring of light coming around from the inside of it.
Mm.
So if light can get in, what's going to get out?
Well... There's that science talk again.
Right, exactly.
Well, Jeremy, it's awful good to talk to you, and I'm glad to know that somebody else was paying attention, because if I'd heard the word coal, I would not have been a well man.
I'm almost positive he said coal ball. I didn't just hear it. I'm pretty sure he did. Sadly,
I believe you. I believe you.
And, good night, Bob.
Hey, you have a good night, too, Jeremy. Bye now.
Thanks, man.
Our buddy Jeremy calling from Vermont. Onward we go. Sandra is with us via Skype. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, can you hear me?
I gotcha.
Oh, hey. So he didn't really... I was looking at the transcript, and he didn't say anything about coal, but he did say clean energy repeatedly.
Oh, well, that probably takes... Yeah, because they still believe in that nostrum. Clean coal.
Well, he didn't say clean coal, though, but, I mean, I know it's easy to hear that because he has been guilty of saying that. I mean, you know, I thought that speech was, you know, obviously he's quite good at what he does. If you look at Rubio to compare, I mean, you know, Obama definitely knows how to do it, but... You know, he is pushing that, he even said it, that Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah, that was another icky moment.
Well, and that negates any of the sort of good stuff he's talking about with jobs and manufacturing, because, agreement, corporations are privileged over almost everything. You know, it's just kind of one of
those government
issues.
Yeah, over government itself, right?
Right. And it's sort of, you know, just listening to it, it's like, well, you know, if you're pushing that, do you not know what's in it? I mean, you just have to sort of wonder, you know, what goes on, because these people are just wedded to these horrible, this is not even a trade agreement. It's just more of a sort of... means for multinationals to dictate to governments, you know? I mean, Australia has already said no to the investor rights aspect of it, which is a huge part of it. So one can only hope that other governments are going to push back, because it basically, right now Australia is fighting Philip Morris because they want to end Australia's ability to just present cigarettes the way they want to, i.e. it'll kill you, pictures of horrible lungs, all sorts of ways on the packages to discourage people from smoking. Well, Philip Morris is basing itself out of Hong Kong in order to try to force Australia through investor arbitration to force them to sell the cigarettes the way Philip Morris wants them to be sold.
Yeah, the gospel according to Philip Morris.
This is a huge case to look out for, because Australia wants to regulate a product the way they see fit. And this multinational corporation is trying to tell the Australian government that, no, you must just sell a plain wrap packet because you're interfering in our profits. So this is what we're being, this is what we're going to face with this TPP thing, which Obama is flogging. And, you know, I fear that's more his legacy, you know, not anything to do with climate change. So, and the other thing that was really disturbing is the, I defer to Simpson Bowles for Medicare. Oh. You know what Simpson Bowles wants to do? They want to add $550 deductible for Part A, which is the hospital part, and Part B, which is for when you see a doctor. So they want to add that much money for seniors to pay. That's what Simpson Bowles
Yeah, but there was another mention in there that gave me the fan, Todd, Sandra, and that was this. When he said, we're going to ask our wealthy seniors to pay a little more.
Right, there's that.
Now, isn't that introducing means testing into Medicare?
Everyone needs to remember that Simpson Bowles wasn't forced on Obama. Obama set that up himself. That's his. So he refers back to it. You know, you have to, alarm bells have to go off. Especially another thing he said was, we were willing to cut Social Security, but not willing to deal with loopholes. I mean, to me, I can read that as, oh, okay, so Social Security is back on the table again.
Yeah, we're back on the table with an apple in our mouths.
So, you know, it's some issues in that speech that are, you know, disturbing. And why would he mention modern pipelines?
That's the thing I was about to get to, Sandra. Why is it that he can't mention climate change without first throwing a bone to the hydrocarbon industry?
Well, not only that, but the market base, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm so sick of that. You know, you said you're sick of free enterprise. I'm sick of market-based solutions. You know, I'm tired of that, you know, because as old, you know, vilified Al Gore said, it's the economy or it's the fucking world. He didn't say fucking, but he said world.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a fairly simple thing to understand. No planet, no economy.
So it's just kind of, you know, and so they hear, you know, and also I read something at Grist, the online, but they were talking about how, well, what he said is one thing, but the next day, which is today, apparently, you know, they're not going to do the one thing that they could do right away without any congressional input, not to Keystone, but to regulate these out-of-date plants. You know, I don't know.
Well, not just the plants themselves, Sandra. The EPA already has the power,
right,
to regulate CO2 emissions as a pollutant. I mean, that power belongs to them. I heard one of the smart folks. I forgot who it was. Maybe it was Lawrence O'Donnell. Say that, well, you know, we couldn't possibly do, you know, we can't use the presidential power to do that because then the Congress will modify the powers of the EPA. Well, hasn't that been ruled on by the Supreme Court? A.
Yes.
And B, we've seen poo-flinging from this House of Representatives asylum before. What the hell good is having a Democratic majority in the Senate if they can't just be a wall to stop that crap?
It's already, you know, I'm already sort of, we're not in a position for his usual pussyfooting and you know, working around the edges. It's not really that kind of issue anymore. I mean, I just read that they established that Sandy was a Category 3 at the end of the day. This is what this latest report is saying. That was a Category 3 hurricane. This last storm, was it Nemo or whatever?
I think that's what we called it.
Yeah, I mean, so you had, and that's also a major storm, which has happened in the last 4 months, and I heard today that there was 200% more moisture in the air at the than any time. So, you know, come on. And the only upside is that this shit is hitting on the East Coast where the elites live. So, you know, I there's no reason to think that they're not going to get more storms.
No, they're just going to get taken care of when the storms hit.
Well, I don't, you know, I mean, I already cringe at these people trying to talk about rebuilding here and there. And, I mean, unless you're poor, then, you know, it's tough titty for you. But it's, you know, it's a
but there was a little bit of sanity, I guess, in Cuomo's gubernatorial State of the State address in New York, where he talked about wanting that program that would do a fairly intelligent thing, and that is with these houses, and there appears to be some buy-in by the actual residents of the affected areas, and they're working, folks, to buy them out and let them move somewhere else and stop trying to live in places that are not meant to be full-time lived in by humans.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just, you know, a bit commonsensical. And, you know, that's not to say that, you know, Obama isn't sincere about the, you know, what he says about climate change, much like his statement about the gun thing, which was quite powerful. But the reality is that with the climate change, we don't seem to have a whole bunch of more time. I think
I think we're already out of time, Sandra.
Well, within his 40, I mean, I just think that, you know, it was just a bit disturbing just listening to the trying to craft something in the medium. There is no middle ground with this anymore, thanks to not responding to it for the last 20 years.
Right. When the barn is burning, you have two choices. Put out the fire or let the fire burn. Reducing the fire some is still a burning barn, is it not?
Yeah,
and that seems to be where they are.
But
what you were talking about just a minute ago about the strong language on the gun issue, even that struck me. And I'm not sitting here looking for reasons to disagree with President Obama, but even that struck me as somewhat thin. You know, Gabby Giffords and all the grieving parents of Newtown and all the other Tucson and Aurora, Colorado, and Columbine and Blacksburg and all the others that he rattled off, they don't deserve a damn vote, Sandra. They deserve relief. And the ones that haven't been murdered yet deserve not to be murdered.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is that, I mean, he, you know, his bully pulpit has been there, though. It's unfortunate that he's coming to it, you know, with no power in the Congress anymore. He had power there, but I mean, I already am reading that the Republicans are already holding up Hagel, and they'll hold up that war criminal Brennan too if they don't get what they want. And weren't we just a couple of weeks ago talking about filibuster reform?
Yeah, we quit talking about that, didn't we? As soon as Harry Reid got done doing what Harry Reid is best at.
Yeah, well, so we're right back at sort of historic events, like they've never held up a nominee to the Defense Department in the history of the presidency, and we're looking at that now. And Reid had a chance to change the rules, but he didn't. So, you know, you gotta wonder what's kind of going on, you know?
Well, but don't we know? I mean, I'm just at a place, Sandra, where I am prepared to say that the government of the United States of America has ceased to design, and understand that the design of the government of the United States of America was never designed to be a dynamic, you know, the bob and weave, punch and run, highly responsive organism. It was designed to maintain the status quo and just, you know, sort of wobble along as best it could on some sort of consensus. And I'm just prepared to say at this point in time, looking at the Congress as it presently exists and understanding the gerrymandering that has been done to keep the Republican House in power, I am prepared to say that the government of the United States no longer functions.
Well, and also, you know, that all this stuff that the Republicans do and, you know, the filibuster remain the way it is, it just stays in place. So, yeah, you know, nothing is going to change. And the whole minimum wage, you know, not to laugh out loud, but it's like, yeah, that's going to happen.
Well, and again, you know, it's kind of like the gun thing, isn't it? $9 an hour? $9 an hour? Nobody's middle class on $9 an hour, Sandra.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, $9 an hour in a place like, say, California is complete poverty. You know, $18,000 a year, you know, you can barely move on that. That's nothing in this state.
And the metric which President Obama used was a little bit disturbing because he was talking about a mom and a dad each working a minimum wage job and raising a family. Well, that, for good or ill, that is not necessarily the dominant family structure in this country anymore, is it?
Well, and not only that, but how does that work out? Because you're going to use one of those incomes is going to be used to pay daycare. So you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
It's absurd, you know, what that whole formula he was coming out with. It's like,
I mean, if,
well,
if,
no, you don't.
I mean, we could maybe have that conversation if it was $9 an hour and they had universal health care or universal access to daycare.
Some family support, you know. They don't have that here. They just want you, you know. And it's the same thing with this sort of immigration stuff that's coming up, which is very disturbing because that one congressman talking about, well, we'll give them a blue card. And it's like, oh, we're talking now indentured servitude because these people will never have access to citizenship, but they'll be able to be cheap labor. You know, indentured servitude, like 21st century style.
Right, and this, so, you know, this goes back to the stuff that I was talking about coming out of that healthcare conference in D.C. If you are born poor in Alabama, you are vastly different under the Medicaid expansion. You are in a vastly different world than if you are born poor in California. I mean, maybe if we're talking, I mean, I understand the economic realities that you just laid out, but it is a considerably different economic picture if you're born poor in California and you've got a mom and a dad and both of them are working two or three uniquely American minimum wage jobs like George W. talked about back in the bad old days. It's a slightly different circumstance if you're born poor and mom and dad have expanded Medicaid than if mom and dad, if mom gives birth in Alabama. I mean, it really is. It's a healthcare Plessy world, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I just heard today that horrible Scott Walker is going to make people do job training for food stamps, and he said no to Medicaid expansion. And this is in Wisconsin. It's like, wow, are those people happy with him now or what? Anyway, it's...
Well, no, they're not. I mean, I know for... I'm headed up that way literally early tomorrow, and there's... People are utterly and absolutely disgusted with him, but the Republican majority they've got in both houses, which was largely a product of more of that bullshit gerrymandering, plus Scott Walker, means that they're going to do what they want no matter what. For instance, the opposition to this... this mine in the Pinocchi Hills that we're going to be talking about on Saturday, you know, opposition is up around 80%. But the Republican majority and Scott Walker don't care. They're going to do what they want to do.
Well, this is the other reason why I'm a bit concerned about the whole Keystone, because, you know, we're not just talking about by denying that, okay, we stopped this pipe. No, this will signal the end of the tar sand. You realize that, right? This is not just, oh, they're going to, you know, they won't get this pipe and that industry will go elsewhere. No, this is a big deal. If they stop this pipeline, there's a good chance that the whole tar sand thing will start to decline a lot because they can't get the shit out. So this is a huge deal. I don't think people realize the whole economics around it. and the pressure that must be coming to bear on Obama, you know, because we're talking about the whole Canadian tar sand industry will pretty much go up in smoke because investors will pull out because they see that it's not going to work very well. The Koch brothers, they have a plant down there. They're desperate to get that shit down too. So, you know, it'll be a real huge deal if he says no to this.
It will be. And you know, the only compelling argument for doing it is the jobs. But the jobs argument is chimerical bullshit.
What okay. do you mean compelling to who? You mean to the general public?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look. But there are labor unions that are signed on to the Keystone. Yeah, we want that pipeline.
Because they've been
promised the moon on the moon swinging on a string.
No, but that's what we'll be told why they're doing it. Though we're not going to be told about all the ins and out of the billions upon billions of investment dollars that are flowed into this. That has to be protected. We're not going to hear that. We're going to hear about the half-ass.
No, and we're not going to be told that it is to the benefit of China. You know, they're in the background to the Keystone XL pipeline, saying, you know, we want it. We got to have the oil. Get it to us. I don't know how much economic leverage there is involved, but it's definitely there.
Well, no, but it's really sick because the western provinces in Canada are mounting huge oppositions to the pipe infrastructure they're trying to do in Canada. And so they're turning to stupid America to extend their horrible industry. That's what's so disturbing because political leaders in whatever province where Vancouver is and all the other sort of port areas on the west coast of Canada, they're all saying no big time to any expansion of trying to get those tar sands out. So they're putting all their eggs in this Keystone basket. And I'm sorry, you know, Obama has never struck me as being a standout strong leader in that regard. So
no, he hasn't.
So I don't really know. I mean, who knows? I'm not going to say.
Can we just involve ourselves in some really shameless speculation here for just a minute? And that's this, Sandra. If you were Barack Obama, and you had just gotten out of a campaign where you had to raise $1 billion because the Koch brothers were hell bent on getting you out of office, wouldn't you just want to screw them to the wall? And you know what? Vindictiveness is not always a low human failing. Sometimes it is a rational response to irrational people. Sometimes this is hard for me to say as a person committed to nonviolence, but sometimes a bully has to be punched in the nose. And the best punch that he could deliver to the Koch brothers' nose would be, because this will financially harm them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the thing. It will. It definitely will. I mean, I've read some interesting reports on, you know, how desperate they are to get this shit down there.
And you know, the funny thing is, on the southern side of this, for people who have followed the issue, the southern side, they're going hammer and tongs building this damn pipeline.
Mm.
And the argument is that, well, you know, we're already underway on the southern half. We might as well link them up and, you know, let's get some business going on. And it's just that modern pipeline stuff. Because it was delivered in dulcet tones and it was almost half of a throwaway line, Sandra. And I thought, wait a minute, modern what? And I know you heard the same thing.
Well, you know, but Bob, I'll just say this. I will continue to believe that it's possible for him to say no until he doesn't. Okay? I'll just look at it like that. I mean, because there's
no need to be extra nasty
about it. But, you know, I'm a bit concerned.
I have never heard you hedge bets before, but a bit concerned. Might be the great Sandra understatement of all time.
Well, it's just, you know, it's just that the evidence is, you know, there's a lot of evidence to to decline this, you know?
Well, if you give a rat's rear end about anything science has to say, there's only one answer to this thing. Decline it.
Because that's an industry that really should just wither. There's a lot of reasons for the tar sands to just wither. I mean, Canada has other oil resources besides that. It's so nasty. I didn't realize just how horrific it was until I started reading about it. It's like, wow, it's awful. So,
and then there are photographs out there that have been taken by people who are really good with cameras, flying over, down on the ground,
yeah.
What have you. And to see the tar sands area of Alberta is to look at a truly something out of a science fiction dystopian nightmare. And, you know, poor old Bill McKibben, and I say poor old, he's neither of the two, but has been screaming till his lungs are gone, organizing, trying his best to tell people that this isn't one of those esoteric decisions we make about whether or not we want something in our backyard. This is a make or break moment in the future history of humanity on this planet.
Well, I mean, it's also interesting that if this is declined, you know, this is also could be the beginning of bringing to the forefront the carbon bubble. And there's already reports, there's a bank out of Hong Kong came out, you know, saying that the value of what's in the ground will rapidly diminish for these oil companies. I mean, I'm talking like 50% of their value could be lost in this carbon bubble. And I was just shaking my head thinking, oh my God, there's a bubble for everything. But the carbon bubble is interesting because people who invest in this stuff, you know, might want to move their money, because if governments decide to seriously address this, it means they have to leave it in the ground. And since the value is based on reserves, that would sort of bring Exxon, for example, to its knees. So, I mean, this is a huge deal. It's a major deal, as that guy said in New Orleans.
Yeah. And see, I would like, I desperately, and we've talked about this before, I desperately want to believe in that Obama who plays, you know, nine-level chess.
Yeah.
Who understands it. But there's also an economic reality. Isn't it an economic truism, Sandra, that the value of going after a resource is proportional to, or the cost of going after a resource is proportional to the value of having that resource? In other words, if a resource is in the ground, they will go after it regardless of the difficulty on the day that getting it out is more profitable than leaving it in?
The thing is, though, you know, as with every industry, the fossil fuel, they got to have the complete cooperation of governments, especially the U.S. government. So I do think that if this pipeline is declined, and you already have financial institutions evaluating the carbons in the ground, you know, Price Waterhouse, these huge insurance companies, all these different entities are now talking about this stuff in terms of a warming planet. So I mean that can't be viewed as anything except positive to me. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have to get all that energy out. You heard in Australia that coal is more expensive now than renewables. You heard about that report, right? Well, and that's because Australia did, brace yourself, introduce the fucking carbon tax, and it's starting to pay dividends.
But the question is, and I did hear that story, but is it more? What is the effect of Chinese demand?
Because Chinese demand is, you know, because they're experiencing, I don't want to say a hard landing, but you know, they're having economic a bit of a slowdown. So it behooves Australia to figure out other things, because I don't think the demand is going to be nowhere near as great as it has been And as you see, China is trying to shift away too. It's not like these countries aren't trying to shift away.
No, Obama mentioned it last night that China is the single greatest engine of renewable energy creation.
But the problem is it fast enough? And you know what I'm saying? That's the thing we're up against, because, you know, Australia can have as many renewables as they want, but if they're going to keep exporting all their carbons everywhere else, you know, then it's self-defeating, isn't it?
Well, I'm afraid it is. And that's why I get a little bit leery of, for instance, the talk about how all of the how so many coal-fired power plants have transitioned to natural gas, because we had that story months ago that pointed out that it turns out natural gas is as nasty a greenhouse gas creator in the long run as coal.
Well, but escaping is a bit of a worry. Yeah.
Yeah, and consider that it seems that there's not a wolf at the door. There's an entire pack. So if we can take it as read for the moment and be optimistic and think that the Keystone XL pipeline is going to be declined, and we do that advisedly only as a sort of an academic exercise, I think, then after that, there's the 1,000-mile-long railroad from the Powder River Basin to those proposed coal terminals in the Pacific Northwest that people in places like Bellingham, Washington, are working so desperately to stop. And that, again, that has nothing to do with American energy. That has to do with shipping all of that coal to China. And if we become an absolutely green, renewable energy powerhouse in this country, but we're still shipping coal to China, again, it's self-defeating, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. And also, you know, what's going on right now is also a little bit disturbing on the domestic front, because we're being told by every elite and institution that can yell at us that, oh, we're having a energy boom. Don't you hear that every day, all the time?
Well, didn't we hear that last night?
Right, but why is it that I'm damn near paying $4 a gallon for gas here?
Yeah, it don't feel real boomy to me.
Right, and I think that's a bit of a contradiction that's going to be problematic coming up, because we're being told this BS, and for most Americans, if the gas is high, they're not hearing all that other gibberish. So, you know.
It's being paid for elsewhere, but I just booked a plane ticket, and I can tell you that fuel prices are damn sure having an impact on airline fares.
Well, yeah, but see, airlines, they use futures, so you shouldn't be paying for that fuel now. They would have bought that months ago.
Well,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, well, maybe that's because, and you know, I hate to say it, I'm flying scabby Delta, but Delta even spent money to buy its own refinery and oil and fuel terminals.
Well, anyway, my point is that, you know, we're just being played as usual.
Yeah.
Because all these idiots think that if we're in a boom, that means we should be paying cheaper gas, which is fair enough, but they don't understand that it's a global market. They can't seem to register that, well, no, we're just turning into, you know, we're going to have the resource curse, you know, and all the horrible things that go with a petrostate.
Well, exactly. One of the things, and I think I mentioned it a couple of nights ago, you know, I'm going up to Wisconsin because there are native peoples up there who are absolutely leading the struggle against this godforsaken taconite iron ore mine up in the Pinoki Hills near Lake Superior. And you know, it's deeply inspiring to see something like this, because people are really, really organized and following natural leadership. Well, it's, I don't know, what is it, 800, 900 miles out, and there's that story, and I've mentioned it a couple of times, of the Crow Nation selling off God knows how many acres to have it strip mined. To have it strip mined. And, you know, to a certain extent, white folks in America have been taught over the last 50 or 60 or 70 years that the native peoples of this hemisphere at least have a working understanding of stewardship of the planet. And then you see this photograph of the Crow people signing, literally signing away their patrimony, their matrimony, in exchange for, again, that ephemeral promise of jobs. And you just, I don't know. I hope when I get up there that maybe I'll have a chance to talk to a couple of people and say, you know, what the hell's going on with them?
Yeah, no, I mean, well, I mean, that's sort of the resource curse in action. But anyway, listen, I should probably go. All I have to say about that Keystone is, like I said, I mean, I'll just sort of, we can't do anything but hope that the right decision is made, but, you know, I don't want to be a fool, so I just have to, I don't know.
What? Light a candle? Pray?
Well, you know, I don't know what to think, you know, because it's, you know, his rhetoric is always okay, but then what he actually does is, you know, always something different. So I don't really know what to think.
Well, I know, I want to sit here and say, oh, you know, the man's going to follow science.
Yeah, who knows? Anyway, listen, have a good evening.
You too, Sandra. Take care.
All right.
Hope we talk soon.
All right.
Bye now. Our good friend Sandra, calling from California. I just got this note in from our buddy Andy, who offers the following in regard to the conversation we've just had. He says, any rational human being, humanist, would know game over, NASA's James Hansen. Either we bake the planet or turn this big Earth around back to a more stable, sustainable climate. But it's the economy, Bob. No matter what the Koch brothers did to Mr. Obama, this is how you reduce the trade deficit and bolster the GDP. And see, I was thinking that very same thing. You know, oh, well, trade deficit, blah, blah, blah. Trade deficit's coming down. But it's coming down on things like hydrocarbon exports. You can make an argument that there's a similarity between, say, the U.S. and Iran in ways, in things that relate to things other than, oh, teen pregnancies and infant mortality and lack of universal health care. Iran, for instance, wants nuclear power if you're not part of the, oh my God, they want to bomb, they want to bomb the world because they're crazy Muslims. If you're not part of that school, then you understand, and I'm not endorsing this because I think it's nuts. They want nuclear power so that they've got more hydrocarbons to put on the market to prop up their economy. Same thing over here. But I just filibobstered all over Andy's email. Let me get back to Andy. No matter what the Koch brothers did to Mr. Obama, this is how you reduce the trade deficit and bolster the GDP. Even though we won't benefit at the pump, because oil and gas prices are determined by world markets, and our anemic reserves, 2% of world reserves, won't move the oil price dial. Last year, 2012, the trade deficit was supposed to be $750 billion, but it was only $540.4 billion because petroleum exports have been so strong. Conversely, since we are producing our own oil, our imports of oil is way down from prior years, so Mr. Obama looks good from a trade deficit and GDP perspective. He makes the Club for Growth and Wall Street very, very happy. Very happy in the ex-president third way, Bill Clinton way. And that is a... that's a bad bit of reality to swallow. So, there, you know, there was the State of the Union. Grieving people deserve a vote instead of deserving relief. And you know, I don't ask this from an I don't like Obama standpoint. I ask this from the standpoint of what the hell does it mean to have some sort of level of representative government? What the hell good is a vote if the vote winds up no? It means that this country has once again been strangled. Whatever attempt we're making at civil society has been throttled by a vocal, wealthy minority. Consider for a moment Wayne LaPierre, who should be in a room with soft walls and a straight jacket, writing his rantings on the wall with a purple crayon clutched between his toes. This afternoon, the Daily Caller gave print space, or electron space, or packet space, or whatever we're going to call it in the 21st century, to Wayne LaPierre, in which he, I don't even know if the word tried is an appropriate verb, but in which he laid out just, I mean, it was nuts. It was deeply and profoundly goofy. It was also kind of bloodthirsty. It was decidedly paranoid. The photograph at his that heads his column is of a flag bearing the legend NRA, Stand and Fight. At this point, they really, really are, and we need to understand this, calling for revolution and civil war in this country. They had their NRA convention on a state level in Wausau, Wisconsin, not too long back, this past weekend. And among the crap that the NRA in Wisconsin was putting out into the body politic was a screed sheet, a scandal sheet, a birdcage liner called the Reality News. Inside the Reality News was an off a piece by authored by Carl P. Koenigs. It was called "What Would Davy Crockett Say?" And Koenigs advocated for liberating what he called our home country of Wisconsin. He went on to say that it might be a good thing to have a combo civil re-revolutionary war to restore the rule of our laws on our elected, non-elected, and wannabe elected Republican and Democrat federal servants through the refreshment of the Tree of Liberty by its natural manure. Natural manure is a Jeffersonian phrase meaning blood. Here's the quote. If you understand the Constitution, you throw up every single time you turn on TV. No, I'm sorry. If you understand the Constitution, you throw up every single time you turn on the TV and hear about another thing or program the U.S. government is going to do for, paren, to, the American people. This is the most heinous disease that can only be cured by the constitutional decentralized power of our home country of Wisconsin, restoring our supreme laws on our federal public servants within our borders, or otherwise by a combo civil re-revolutionary war with the very same goal to restore the rule of our laws on our elected, non-elected, and wannabe elected Republican and Democrat federal servants through the refreshment of the Tree of Liberty by its natural manure. He also said, at the federal level, until the rule of law is restored, this is an absolute pipe dream. At this juncture of democracy, of mob rule, most feared by our founding fathers and utter Tenth Amendment contempt for the Constitution, and then this, in all caps, and elections are not the solution to our problem. Elections are the problem. This was passed out at the Wisconsin NRA convention. Okay? That's loopy enough. That's dangerous enough. Let's go ahead and say it. That is treasonous enough. Because when you start talking about things like that, you are talking about treason as defined in the Constitution by those beloved framers these people like to hoot about, but of whom they know next to nothing. A few quotes, if we may, from the Daily Caller manifesto penned by Wayne LaPierre. And really, I saw the quote in the chat room a little bit ago. Have you ever seen a commie drink a glass of water, Mandrake? And this is that. Latin American drug gangs have invaded every city of significant size in the United States. Phoenix is already one of the kidnapping capitals of the world. And though the states on the U.S.-Mexico border may be the first places in the nation to suffer from cartel violence, by no means are they the last. Get your guns, Hubert. The Mexicans are coming. The president flagrantly defies the 2006 federal law ordering the construction of a secure border fence along the entire Mexican border. So the border today remains porous, not only to people seeking jobs in the U.S., but to criminals whose jobs are murder, rape, robbery, and kidnapping. Have you ever seen a Mexican drink a glass of water, Mandrake? Have you? Ominously, the border also remains open to agents of Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. Numerous intelligence sources have confirmed that foreign terrorists have identified the southern U.S. border as their path of entry into the country. A heinous act of mass murder, Mandrake, either by terrorists or by some psychotic who should have been locked up long ago, there he goes getting autobiographical, will be the pretext to unleash a tsunami of gun control. Really? Really, Wayne? A tsunami? Tsunami. Can we get Wayne to somewhere where he can understand what a tsunami really is? Oh, hell, let him have his little rubber ducky life ring with it. I don't care. After Hurricane Sandy, we saw the hellish world that the gun prohibitionists see as their utopia. Looters ran wild in South Brooklyn. There was no food, water, or electricity. And if you wanted to walk several miles to get supplies, you better get back before dark, or you might not get home at all. Meanwhile, President Obama is leading this country to financial ruin, borrowing over $1 trillion a year for phony stimulus spending and other payoffs for his political cronies. Nobody knows if or when the fiscal collapse will come, but if the country is broke, there likely won't be enough money to pay for police protection, and the American people know it. Hurricanes, tornadoes, riots, terrorist gangs, lone criminals, these are perils we're sure to face, not just maybe. It's not paranoia to buy a gun. It's survival. It's responsible behavior. And it's time we encourage law-abiding Americans to do just that. In the name of the Continental Congress and the Queen, Mandrake, we need to do just that. Mein Führer, I convoke! We, the American people, clearly see the daunting forces we will undoubtedly face. Terrorists, crime, drug gangs, the possibility of Euro-style debt riots, civil unrest, or natural disorder. We cannot have a mine shaft gap. We, the NRA, are the largest civil rights organization in the world. Animals can be bred and slaughtered. While I don't go in much for prophecy, I'm pretty comfortable with the idea of self-fulfilling prophecy. Just watch the for-profit media. Republicans said there was a debt crisis. Suddenly, the for-profit media couldn't talk about anything but the debt and the deficit. And suddenly, there was a debt crisis. Entirely manufactured. Out of whole cloth. And not out of money, but out of words. If you listened to Marco Rubio last night, you're pretty sure that he was born a poor black child, just like Steve Martin in The Jerk. At least he saved us from hearing about his special purpose. Yeah, as P. Darkness is noting in the chat room, I can't wait to hear Wayne LaPierre showing up on Alex Jones. That ought to be a real laugh fest. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
A communist, an illegal alien, and a Muslim walk into a bar. The bartender goes, "What can I get for you, Mr. President?"
He'll be here all week. What's happening, Jethro? Don't forget to tip your waiter.
Not much. Not much. I was just calling about the Cat Daddy Jim experience last night.
Oh, you know, we have our issues from time to time, but as I tried to make clear to him, you know, my point was that, you know, disagree is fine, but don't tell me how to program the show.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I think he was just, I don't know, his whole career, I think he was in a position of authority, and he just, that's just his way. You know, I don't think he means any, you know.
No, I understand that. I hope I clarified the issue of the difference between having genuine spirituality versus, you know, following some perverted organized religion.
Yeah, well, you've had stuff down your throat from the, you know, since your earliest memory. And that's, you know, and that's unfortunate. Plus, every nationwide pastor, the TV, you know, preacher, they're all, you know, corrupt and millionaires and worldly, but they have so many followers. So, the true spirituality, but that's never, you know, we're never taught that. We're taught the opposite of that, which is our, you know, our more material, animalistic nature.
Yeah, well, it's that, and it's also the fact that the organized religion industry is not about start smartening up the chumps, because you know the organized religion provides a magnificent means of social control, Jethro.
Yeah. Plus, it's a great, you know, it's a great money collection operation. I mean, you know, look at the Vatican and the Catholic hierarchy. They've got their own bank. What a scam that is.
Yeah, at least the Southern Baptists don't have a bank yet.
But you're fed that mythology all of your life, and you get to believe it. You're brainwashed. Yeah, you know? And it's a mind lock. If you're convinced that if you think out of the box, you're going straight to hell.
Well, look, I mean, Jethro, I'll be the first one to acknowledge that because, you know, I don't use the notion that I'm a recovering Southern Baptist as some piece of shtick. I am. Because what is done to you when you are a little bitty child stays with you. That's why churches try to get the children young.
Yeah. Well, now, some of the fear stuff is bad. But as a child, when you're innocent like that, some of that Jesus stuff you connect with, too, though. You believe that. Because there's something inside you that connects with that.
Well,
you're not taught how to develop that. You're taught how to, you know, how to start surviving and how to do this, how to do that, and how to start.
And how to follow what somebody else said about what Jesus said.
Yes. But see, and that's the way, you know, with the indigenous cultures and stuff. Native Americans, on the tribal culture, you know, all this individualism and stuff, but they went out and had their own spiritual experience, their own vision quest, and that made them their own person. They didn't have to go and be lemmings and go to the crowd and be a sheep and stuff. They knew, you know, they knew for themselves. That's the difference between blind belief and knowing.
And seeking.
Yeah, and seeking. And that strengthens your faith.
And I'll be clear on this, Jethro. I'm far more inclined to take seriously something that someone has received on a vision quest after a night of peyote than I am to accept as infallible truth something that got concocted in the bowels of the Vatican.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, but
because there are ulterior motives that are obvious in the latter, whereas in the former, the individual is mainly just looking to understand. It's the same existential quest that human beings have been on since we first figured, wondered, why it gets dark and why it gets light.
Yeah, but the peyote is not, that's not the end of it. That's just the start of it, because that can be done without the peyote.
Oh, sure. I had that story Monday night about the, and I'm still deeply disturbed by that story. About the El Condor region of Ecuador and the fact that there's a lot of European Western-type folks who are getting on planes and flying to southern Ecuador to go and sit with a shaman and have an ayahuasca experience.
Oh, yeah, that's big time.
And I'm not criticizing that. I would far rather see more people doing that than blasting the bejesus out of the region to get it some damn gold.
Yeah, or going down there for, alcohol and prostitute adventure, which most of them do.
Now, that was Peru.
But I don't know, we're evolving though as a culture and stuff. People are getting more into their spiritual side and stuff. They're seeing, we have for years tried, since, we have this spiritual void, but we know something's missing. And in a lot of cases, we're brainwashed into trying to achieve that freedom, that spiritual freedom, through material accumulation, and just doesn't work, just because you want more, and you never get the satisfaction. And then you've got your basement full of stuff, your garage, your outbuilding, and you're still wondering what's up.
Yeah, and they just damned well will not rent you that U-Haul to put behind your hearse.
Exactly, and you don't want to get rid of it. Just might need it someday.
Yeah.
But I was just, I was kind of wanting to take up for Jim because I think he's, Catholic or?
No, Jim is Episcopalian.
Episcopalian? Okay.
That's sort of, the way I understand it, that's sort of a popeless Catholicism.
Right. Well, any organized religion like that it's become corrupted. So, but there are, there's stories of Christian monks and stuff now that have, achieve, the same thing as these monks and stuff do in the Himalayas that go up way up into the mountains. They might be
right, and they were achieving that in the earliest days of so-called Christianity. They were wandering off into Sinai and living in caves in rocks.
But the thing of it is, you're not going to find them on TV. They're up in a cave holed up somewhere.
Right, because even if they're working within the framework of, for instance, some Greek Orthodox or Roman Catholic organizational principle, ultimately they're having a personal experience.
Oh yeah.
And it is in that way, even though it was declared a heresy and people were killed for it, it is reminiscent of Gnosticism, Jethro.
Oh yeah.
Because the central tenet of Gnosticism was that they were called the perfects, weren't they? Would learn and the Gnostic Gospels, for instance, reference them. The secret wisdom of Jesus Christ.
Exactly. Gnosticism. So.
Now, this is probably presumptuous of me, but I think I know what the secret was.
Yes.
I think the secret was, there's no secret.
Well, it's the secret hidden in plain sight.
did you see Kung Fu Panda?
Can't say that I.
Ah, it's a lovely piece of animation, and I watched it because my kids were watching it. It was a delightful little film, and I'll ruin this for you anyway. There's the Scroll of Power or whatever it is, and this ridiculous panda who has no hopes of ever being a kung fu master or being, you know, the anointed one, the chosen one, the one prophesied, blah, 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 eventually finds himself being the recipient of the scroll of power. And
we can all relate to that.
Yeah, and within the scroll of power, you know, he expects to open it up, and it's very vividly portrayed in this children's film. There's no message on the scroll. The only thing he sees in the scroll is himself staring back at himself.
Right, right. Yeah, that's like the kung fu.
And that is the power.
The power, yeah, yourself. Sure. That's the Star Trek, the outer space, the final frontier.
Sure.
Well, and actually, the final frontier, which is much more vast than the material creation, inner space. And how do you do that? Through, you know, going inside yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the key to the
cosmos is inside yourself. How do you find that? No one's ever told you about it. And it sounds crazy, yeah.
But the key to beginning that journey, Jethro, is the rejection of the idea that somebody can make up a set of rules or can lay down little stones for you to step across or can create some magic whereby if you eat the cracker just right and you drink the really cheap wine just right, that then something magic will happen in your tummy.
Right.
Or your soul.
Yeah.
You know, that's nothing more than mechanistic mumbo jumbo.
And
which is probably a bad word for me to use, by the way, and I apologize.
Once you get set, that's a law of physics, too. You know, an object in motion will keep going in the same direction, same speed, until acted on by an outside force. Most people are resistant to change, and most people don't change their ways unless something happens to them, something drastic, something dramatic. Bang. And then a lot of this brainwashing gets washed away, and the reality, what's real in life sets in, and they're different people from then on. They make that change. But otherwise, you know, if you're dumb, fat, and happy, why would you want to change?
Yeah, I mean, consider for an instant the book which the early Christian compilers of the Bible knew about and deliberately chose not to include in the canon because it was so damned radical. The opening lines of the Gospel of Thomas. These are the opening lines of Thomas. These are the secret sayings which the living Jesus spoke, and which Didymus Judas Thomas wrote down. And he said, whoever finds the interpretation of these sayings will not experience death. Jesus said, let him who seeks continue seeking until he finds. When he finds, he will become troubled. When he becomes troubled, he will be astonished, and he will rule over the all. If those who lead you say to you, see, the kingdom is in the sky, then the birds of the sky will precede you. If they say to you, it's in the sea, then the fish will precede you. Rather, the kingdom is inside of you, and it is outside of you. When you come to know yourselves, then you will become known, and you will realize that it is you who are the sons of the living Father. But if you will not know yourselves, you dwell in poverty, and it is you who are that poverty.
Right. And that's the biggest misconception in Christianity is, you know, I am the way that, you know, nobody comes through me except through me, through Jesus Christ. What he was talking about was not himself the person, not through him, but through, by attaining yourself, Christ consciousness, realizing.
But you know what? If you're gonna try to control millions and millions of people,
you can't have that.
That ain't gonna work.
Because that's real.
Because then you get it. Then you know. Then everybody basically gets out of their chrysalis, and everybody's a butterfly, and everybody goes the way butterflies go, and you're never gonna catch them all. So instead, we'll sell them tickets out of hell and into heaven.
That's right. So we get a materialistic culture, but it's changing. Because actually, in the high and Himalayan mountains, there are more Europeans and Americans up there looking than there are, you know,
And I think in large part, Jethro, that is because, and this actually predates Christianity. You know, it was Caesar marching into Gaul who eliminated the native religions of most of the people that we would recognize as early Europeans. Killed the Druids down to the last one. Literally cut down the sacred oak groves. That was Julius Caesar. So, for my purposes, as a person of Scots or Celtic ancestry, I have, and I think I've said this before, I have no idea what the religion of my forefathers was.
Yeah. And some, you know, in the mythology say that the Celtic stuff all came from Mary Magdalene.
I don't put a lot of stock in that because
you never know.
Well, but the Celtic stuff predates her. That's the whole thing. Mary Magdalene, you know, Julius Caesar died in 44 BC.
Oh, okay.
Mary Magdalene won't be born for another, you know, 40 years.
Sweet.
It was a native religion, whatever it was. You know, we found guys wearing funny hats, strangled and thrown in peat bogs. It may not have been a religion of peace. We all, you know, one of the few things that we do have sort of a group memory of is the concept of the Fisher King, where the young guy is, you know, fed well, has a lot of sex, and then is strangled for fertility in the spring.
Right.
I'm not endorsing that, but I'm saying that I don't know what it was. And that is the way for most people of Western European stock, and hence I am not at all surprised, Jethro, to find that they are high up in the Himalayas or in the jungles of the El Condor or in the deserts of the Southwest munching on peyote or ayahuasca or whatever they do in the Himalayas. I'm not at all surprised to find that they're there, because when you get right down to the bottom of it, organized Christian ecclesiastical religion is a miserable, abject failure, and it has been almost from the moment that Constantine endorsed it for his own rather crass political reasons.
Yeah. Now, there are some good Christian people out there doing some good things, but for the most part...
Right, but they're doing good things because they're good people. Christianity didn't make them good people. They started out that way. You know, it's like that quote we had on the show last night. There will always be good people doing good things in the world. There will be bad people doing bad things in the world. But for good people to do bad things, that takes religion.
Well, if it takes religion or not, you can be an atheist and you know, kill somebody. So.
No.
It's
but for
just,
good
it's human
people...
nature. But you know, we're taught material things, and then... You know, the more you get greedy or you think you need this, but then you have to steal. And so our way of life, you know, I mean, Jesus, Gandhi, even the Pope, they all support socialism. But they've brainwashed into thinking that's some kind of an evil, terrible system. We can't have that. And people believe that. They will fight, you know, it's almost like, you know, in the Matrix, they didn't want to release anybody that was too old because they'd fight and buck. When they found out what the truth was, and people are fighting back.
And there, you know, and I mean, you bring up a pop culture reference like The Matrix. I brought up Kung Fu Panda. There are all kinds of little hints out there, Jethro.
Out there. Exactly.
That there. Stuff ain't working.
Yeah, and actually, you know, and this plus the stuff you're fed all of your life, you are a born sinner. That is hogwash. You're not a born sinner.
Well, you know, I think back to the story, and this it's autobiographical, so I'm not making this up. He said this about himself. You know, that great learned Christian, Dr. James Dobson, the one who said that we need to beat children until they cry real tears, the one who said that in order to keep your son from being gay, you need to take him naked into the shower with you and shake your penis at him. You know, really, he said all that. Well, he described his conversion to Christianity by talking about the fact that he was the son of an evangelist himself, and at the age of three, weeping, he walked, you know, come on, he's three. He toddled down the aisle to fall on his face and beg forgiveness for his sins and get saved.
Sandusky should have used the Dobson defense.
No kidding. But at three, Jethro.
Yeah, so that's madness.
You know, how can a 3-year-old conceptualize sin unless the concept of sin has been foisted upon him? It didn't come from some internal a priori knowledge.
Well, they make up these stories of their life and how they realize all this was sinful behavior and all this. It's just to get you to think that you're a worthless sinner and that if you don't toe the line and listen to them, it's hell for eternity. And that's just, it's not the case. You ain't going to hell. Hell's a mental state. It's not permanent. It's a learning experience.
No, what did Sartre say? Hell is other people? Was that Jean-Paul Sartre?
So, anyway. And we are spiritual beings, first and foremost. We're in this animal body, you know, and this, and we've been around for a long time. And our souls have been around for a long, long, long time, since creation.
Well, you know what? Everything about a human being has been around, and I love this concept. Everything about any given human being who has ever breathed air on this planet was present in the very instant of the Big Bang.
Well, your soul was, yes. Now, humans...
No, your physical... Everything that is in your body was there. Matter is neither created nor destroyed.
Yeah, matter is either... it's there, it's either manifested or unmanifested.
And so, you know, to the extent that, you know, the air we breathe, the water we take in...
Mm-hmm. So the question you have to ask yourself is, where have you been since the Big Bang?
Right. You know, I'm not around. I'm not a person. I mean, I live here right now. I'm not a person of this planet. I'm a piece. I'm a bunch of pieces of the universe. And that's about as close to mystical or spiritual as I ever want to get behind this microphone, because I would not dare to suggest that anyone should think anything that I think about the universe.
Right. Right. And it's,
But the beautiful thing is I can be all those things without a bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky.
Or Joe Alstein putting the big toothy smile on you.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what? But once you come to a realization like that, you look at everybody from kings to popes to Joel Osteen. And to the extent you want to get angry, well, okay, because I do.
Well,
but mostly you just chuckle.
Yeah, well, you have to chuckle because actually, you know, does Joel Osteen, does anything he do affect my life? No. What affects my life? What I do. You know, is Joel Osteen going to be there holding my hand at the pearly gates? Negative. It's going to be me and me alone and, you know, the real deal is going to come out then, so...
Yeah. I mean, Texas Betsy, for instance, just sent me a message here. She said, my 3-year-old synagogue students sing 2 or 3 Shabbat songs and listen to a Torah story every Saturday. It's slightly more age-appropriate. But, you know, and it is more age-appropriate. But the fact of the matter is, you know what? Dobson was not the only one who heard that screaming at the age of 3. The first time I, as a child, ever knew fear was after I had been inside the so-called sanctuary of that Baptist church. And it was not a fear of God. It was a fear of that maniac at the front of the room who was waving his arms and screaming at the top of his lungs.
Yes, yes.
You know, I didn't know what was going to happen if he decided to come down and move amongst us. He might hurt somebody.
Right. And some, I don't know, some people think that's a spiritual thing, but that's just an emotional,
I've got a story here that you're going to just love, Jethro.
They're just...
I found it in the chat room earlier. You may have seen it, too. Headline, Kentucky pastor wants snakes back that TWRA confiscated. TWRA is the Tennessee Wildlife...
conservation officers?
Yeah, it turns out that this guy was a snake handler, and... was driving through Knoxville, and he got his snakes confiscated.
Poor devil. Can't have that.
Yeah, Pastor Gregory Coots.
That took my snakes away.
Of the Full Gospel Tabernacle in Jesus' name of Middlesboro, Kentucky. He had his windows were too tinted, and it turned out they were tinted because he had a bunch of vipers in his back seat.
Yeah. Now, I tell you what, now I've studied up on that, and I heard a big thing on NPR about it one time, about this New York reporter who was going down to investigate, and next thing you know, he's going native. He was picking them up himself because it was so powerful that
Until you get let it, you know, again, we go back. I'm far more likely to follow Field's Three Commandments than God's Ten, okay? Because the three commandments of William Charles Duncan Fields are much more compelling, Jethro.
Yeah, and
the first one is you can't cheat an honest man. Okay, so anytime somebody gets cheated, they have to have had some flaw that allowed it to happen. Two, never give a sucker an even break, and three, don't smarten up a chump. Okay, and so you can think that it is a powerfully moving experience to handle the serpent in a serpent handling church in Kentucky or wherever, but the fact of the matter is they haven't smartened up the chumps yet. Because the fact of the matter is when they pick the snakes up, they are damn near dormant because they are in a cooler and they have been refrigerated into something approaching hypostasis.
I hear you.
And they only start getting snaky as they get handed around. And the ones who come last are the ones who are most likely to be bitten, and therefore they are pointed out as being not sufficient of faith. When in fact, it's not their faith, it's the fact that they were picked out by the church leadership to handle the hot snake. It's not far different from carnival work, Jethro.
Yeah. Well, I think there is some phenomenon going on there, but it's not a spiritual thing. I think it's more of an emotional pent up stuff. You know, you're up there and you go into almost a trance through the emotional stuff, but it's not a real spiritual thing. And and if you feel like you have to pick a snake up to prove something, that's not. I mean, why not some kind of austerity? If you want to prove something, fast, or you know, go up in the cave for a few days, something like that.
Because you have to have the social approval of the peer group, of the cult group. You know, I go back to something. Our buddy Dr. John has a SIG line on his Gmail, and I even mentioned it. I think Monday night, before enlightenment, gather firewood, carry water. After enlightenment, gather firewood, carry water.
Nothing changes. It's not like you become, you know.
I remember Robin Williams talking about getting clean and sober, and he thought he was going to be this different person. When instead he said he found out that he just really had a lot less tolerance for cocktail parties, watching everybody else get effed up.
Right. And that's not the way of the culture here. I mean, in India, some guys are like skyclad, and all they have is like a pot for water and stuff, and a feather broom duster. You know, so they dust off the area so they won't kill any microbes or anything. They stay out in the jungle. So, but no, that's a different phenomenon too. But we're all, you know, we're spiritual creatures, and our soul, we actually have the soul. It resides about the size of from your first knuckle up on your thumb, resides right in between the SA and the AV node. It's a little nodule right there.
That'll be darn.
And that actually is what controls everything. There's like five nodules of control in there. That's why, you know, when you memorize something, how do you term that in school? I memorized that by...
Rote.
Or I memorized that by... Head. I memorized that by head, memorized that by heart.
Oh, yeah, to know it by heart.
Where does that come from? The heart, yeah, and that's one thing of our dual nature, where, you know, a lot of things, and that is, you know, and people wonder why does God allow this to happen? Why does God allow kids to be killed? Why does this? For one thing, they're not going straight to hell; they're going straight to the bosom of, you know, of heaven.
Yeah,
plain. And this, you know, and they have another life. You know, this is like a motion picture. You get killed in a movie, one actor gets killed in a movie, then a year or two later you see him in a different role in another movie. That's the same way our lives are. So, pretty wild.
Well, it absolutely is. Yeah. Jethro, it's been a magnificent conversation. You should, well, I'm always happy when you call.
Cool. I'll call again.
You should. You doing all right otherwise?
Yes. I'm retired now.
Are you really?
Yes, sir. Living a good life.
Taking the long walk to the mailbox once a month?
Sure enough.
Well, let me ask you, are y'all getting much snow over there?
A dusting, if that.
I'm sitting here trying to figure out whether or not I should go ahead and drive on down the mountain tonight and just sleep in a chair at the airport or get up at 4 o'clock and go do it.
Just a dusting here. There might be more on the mountain. But, you know, so the key to soul awareness, to practice, and the center is that, you know, you have the ego or you're acting from the center after, you know, if you do repose every day, meditation, prayer, silence, anything like that, reading, every day, then you get more towards your true center rather than your ego. As we evolve, that's what it's going to be. And then, you know, all these ego-centered people, that everything's going to change. I don't know if it's going to be in our lifetime or not, but that's cool. But that comes with meditation stuff. You become more calm.
Maybe Jethro, that explains why those fundies out in California filed a lawsuit against the schools for teaching that yoga.
Well, you know, because they're taking away their control. That's freeing people. I've been in drum circles, and people were drumming and dinging Tibetan thimbles and stuff. It was heavy. And then all of a sudden, over in the corner, I heard like three or four Indians going, ah! And I thought, man, them guys over in the corner, you know, they're getting off the hook. Trying too hard. Ceremony, smudging, the whole deal. Drama. Anyway, lights came on. Still wasn't anybody.
There wasn't no Indians in the corner.
Yes. And my son was with me. He looked around and said, Dad, did you hear that? And he said, what was that? I said, look, you heard it the same as I did, so.
You know, I'm a man who busts his ass to live in the rational world, Jethro. But you know, I'll get right down there with Shakespeare and say there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophies, Horatio.
The spirits are a lot closer than you think, much much closer.
Oh, I've seen my buddy Matt Sherman he's just blown my mind a couple of times.
And it's more subtle. I mean, the hand of the devil is like a sledgehammer blow. The hand of the spirit is very subtle. And sometimes, if just out of the blue, you think of your dad or a deceased person that you're really close with, bonded with, just out of the blue start thinking about them, they're right there.
Well, you know, that's you're getting kind of an amen from our buddy, the angry Indian. He says, haints exist.
Haints exist, for sure. The spirit world's not that far away. But we have been blinded to it. We've been taught to think that's malarkey. That's of the devil.
Well,
it's not. It's our true nature.
I tend to favor more of the things that can be quantified and measured, because I really don't, Jethro. I don't want to live in a world where if I press the button over here that says record, it might record the stream. Or it might make me be demon possessed, because you know, in the miracle world, you know, that's the kind of crap that happens.
Yeah.
In the reality world, when I press the record button, unless there is something desperately wrong inside the mechanics of the machine, it's going to deliver a message that says recording, not repent now.
Right, right. And I think when you last time you went to Wisconsin, I think you felt it up there too, and you came back because you were, you know, I don't know if you realize it or not, but for a while there, you were pretty blissed out.
Oh, I was. I know I was.
So, yeah, and that's a form of knowing.
Well, and
tacking it down's the hard work.
Well, let me be fair too. That some, you know, I was blissed out, and part of the reason for that, I hate to admit it because I love this. You know, you've been here for a long, long time too. I love this area, but I hate what's happening to it.
Oh yeah.
And this is a hard place to live, and I don't mean financially hard, or I mean it is just a plain old fashioned hard place to live. And so one of the things, and I've observed it in myself, Agnes has observed it in herself, I've seen it in the rest of my family, we get out of here for a couple of weeks, and we become different people. And we come back, and everything falls apart again.
Well, I hear you. I hear you.
Because, you know, as David from Tennessee once pointed out, he said, this is a state whose songs are always played in a minor key.
Yeah. Well, you just got to take, you know, some of that bliss that you get outside and try to cultivate that, you know, back at home. I mean, because, I don't know, there's only so much you can, you know, worry about as opposed to what you can really, you know, do something about. So, and anyway, and life is all about experience and getting out there. And, you know, you're doing that. You're getting around. You're making contacts. And, yeah, you're living life. It's good.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I miss the most, and this is just a very practical thing, when we're in D.C., for instance, every morning I get up and I walk down, you know, it's probably about a half a mile and a half a mile back, and I walk down to the bakery and I get a fresh-baked baguette.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say jelly donut.
No, I'm trying to be a little more enlightened than that, too.
Just kidding.
But, you know, it's about $2, and I turn around and I walk back and spend the morning eating warm French bread with Irish butter and some no high fructose corn syrup, bitter citrus marmalade on it. And it's bliss. But I get that walk every day and doing that walk, but you know, yeah, sure. I'm going to go out here to US 60 and walk a mile every day.
Suicide mission.
Right. Suicide mission. I mean, that was one of the things that blew my mind when we first moved here, was I walked everywhere when I was a kid. And when I was old enough to ride a bicycle, I rode a bicycle everywhere when I was a kid. And that reality was not available to my children. And then that was when I began to realize, oh, man, maybe we screwed up. And then the blasting started. Jesus. Jethro, it's been a wonderful conversation. I hope we will talk soon.
Sounds good, Bob.
All right. What is it, Jethro?
It's madness, I tell you. It gets worse every day, seemingly.
We'll see you, brother.
Later.
Bye now. Man, Jethro and I have been having some conversations for about 10 years, just like me and Jim. And he is a spirit among spirits. It is about 2.5 minutes before we're due out of here, before Rick Smith takes over here on the Horn Stream. A reminder, I am gone tomorrow and Friday and all weekend, and I hope to be back for more in Monday. I will try to tweet if it's going to be otherwise. We have a challenge on the table to make February and thus March, and maybe we can talk about April, much more likely. A kind gift of $500 came in this evening. Blew my mind with the call to see if we can get people who didn't jump in on the big crisis to participate. So thanks to Donald. Like I said, back Monday. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to our all volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, Texas Betsy in the chat room. Sparky's also the moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Agnes for her help with the posts. Thanks to John Fox for every last thing that he does, and he does so many. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. Go there. Learn how you can be a part of ending Appalachia's agony via the sponsorship and passage of H.R. 526, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Yeah, Rick Smith is next on the Horn.